Hey, 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 and welcome to the September 22nd edition of this Off the Deaton Path podcast. My name is Stan Deaton with the Georgia Historical Society. We're recording this week from the Billiard Room of Baskerville Hall, and we welcome you to another edition of Off the Deaton Path. We have a lot of ground to cover this week. I appreciate you being here. We're going to start off with the mailbag. Our erstwhile mailman, Gary F. Taylor, born and raised, that's right, always lumbers in here staggering under the load of the mail that he has received this week. There are three I want to read to you on the air. The first one we received from across the pond. This one is dated September 13th from Newcastle-on-Tyne, Chopwell. A very nice letter I want to read to you. I am writing as a descendant of the founder of the state of Georgia, James Edward Oglethorpe, to ask how Georgia has fared in the wake of Hurricane Irma. Friends of mine had to make hurried departures from Florida. According to the BBC World News, the hurricane had gone north to Georgia. How much damage has been caused as a result? Yours sincerely, Dr. J. Oglethorpe Fletcher. What a very nice letter. Dr. Oglethorpe Fletcher, we are very pleased to tell you that Savannah fared very well during this hurricane. As I mentioned in a previous podcast, we came through it with light damage, and I say that relative. If your house is flooded out on Tybee Island or Wilmington Island or someplace else, that's not light damage, and I understand that. The most of Savannah, compared to Hurricane Matthew last October, fared very well. We certainly had no damage here at the Georgia Historical Society. So Dr. Oglethorpe Fletcher, a descendant of James Edward Oglethorpe, delighted to hear from you. Thank you for writing from Chopwell on Newcastle-on-Tyne. Our second letter this week is one of those that you're glad to get, but you're not glad to get at the same time. This was a letter that came into our producer last week. This is not a complaint about this podcast. Oh, heavens no. I'll read it to you. Hello, my name is Courtney Tyre, and I teach 8th grade Georgia Studies in Jessup, Georgia, and am a friend of Stan Deaton's cousin, Kathy Broadhead. Hi, Kathy. This is concerning Today in Georgia History. I use your Today in Georgia History videos in my daily routine with my class. I noticed that there is an error in one of your facts videos. Helen Mankin, she is referring to the September 11th Today in Georgia History broadcast. Helen Mankin was not Georgia's first woman elected to serve as a U.S. representative in the U.S. Congress. Florence Reveal, that's R-E-V-I-L-L-E, and I may be mispronouncing that. Florence Reveal Gibbs, G-I-B-B-S, was the first. She was elected to the 76th Congress in 1940. This was done by special election to fill the seat of her husband, Ben Gibbs, who died while in office. I know this because there are multiple sites that confirm this, and also because she is my great-grandmother. Helen Mankin was not elected to Congress until 1946. Thank you for your time, Courtney Tyre. Ms. Tyre, you are absolutely correct. We messed that up when we did Today in Georgia History. The source we used, which is the New Georgia Encyclopedia and several others, and I'm not blaming them, but they do cite her as the first woman elected to Congress. And I suspect some of the confusion comes in. Ms. Gibbs ran unopposed for her husband's seat, and Helen Mankin won a contested election. So maybe she's the first woman to win a contested election. But in any case, we appreciate you bringing this to our attention. I can assure you that on the Today in Georgia History website, we will not be able to correct the video, of course, but we will make a note of the transcript that Florence Gibbs was actually the first woman elected to the House of Representatives in Congress from Georgia. And finally, as you know, at the end of every podcast, I always say if you have something nice to say, you should write to me at sdeaton@georgiahistory.com. Any complaints go to our producer. And this week, I received a very nice letter. I'll read it to you. Dr. Deaton, I greatly enjoyed your podcast this past week regarding Vietnam. I was a young woman during that tumultuous time in our country's history, and I have many of my own stories to tell and my own opinion of Tricky Dick Nixon. I look forward to hear Mr. Burns' take on the war. Thanks for sharing. The gals and I love your podcast. Fondly, Zelda Watkins, Sparta, Georgia. Miss Watkins, I cannot thank you enough for this note. I am so glad that you and the gals are enjoying the podcast every week. I look forward to hearing from you again. I hope you're enjoying Ken Burns' documentary on the Vietnam War. I knew it would be controversial, and it is. It's been going now for a week. It was unfortunate that it started last Sunday night when there were a lot of other things on television people wanted to see, like the Falcons play the Packers, the Emmy Awards were on, and of course, Ken Burns' documentary started as well. But I hope Miss Watkins is enjoying that as much as she is clearly enjoying our podcast. We turn now to a new feature here on Off the Deaton Path that I probably will try to do every week if I can, and that is to bring to your attention, because you're so busy you don't have time to do this, some notable passings this week, notable deaths, if you will, that happened during this past week. We start out Friday, September 15th, a week ago. Noted character actor Harry Dean Stanton died at the age of 91. You may remember him from movies like Straight Time, Alien, Wise Blood, Escape from New York. He played Patrick Swayze's father in the 1984 movie Red Dawn. I don't know why I remember him from that, and I do. Early in his career, he went by the last two names, Dean Stanton, which I think is funny because people often get my name mixed up and call me Dean Stanton, which is weird. I'm not at all like Harry Dean Stanton. But noted character actor Harry Dean Stanton died Friday, September 15th at the age of 91. Bernie Casey, who is a former professional football player who turned poet, painter, and actor. If you ever saw Revenge of the Nerds or I'm Gonna Get You, Sucka, you saw Bernie Casey, and you would know him if you saw him. He died on Tuesday, September 19th. He was 78 years old. If you ever read The New Yorker, you may have read words written by Lillian Ross. She was an acclaimed reporter for The New Yorker. She died Wednesday, September 20th in Manhattan at the age of 99. She wrote a book in 1964 called Reporting. And this is what she said. Your attention at all times should be on your subject, not on you. Do not call attention to yourself, unquote. Can you imagine what she must think about the social media world that we live in now, where everything is always about you and about me, of course. Lillian Ross, acclaimed reporter for The New Yorker, died this week at the age of 99. And finally, Jake LaMotta, whose life was portrayed in Martin Scorsese's 1980 film Raging Bull, died Tuesday, September 19th in Florida. He was 95 years old. He fought Sugar Ray Robinson six times. He won the middleweight championship in June 1949. He lived quite a life, captured on film. Robert De Niro played him in that film. He was 95 years old when he died last week. And finally, one notable passing in history that happened on this week, 44 years ago, or during this week, 44 years ago, Thursday, September 20th, 1973, singer Jim Croce died in a plane crash in Natchitoches, Louisiana. He had been playing a concert at Northwestern State University that evening. He was flying to Sherman, Texas for a concert at Austin College. His plane clipped a tree at the end of the runway. It was due to pilot error. It was and Mr. Croce was not the pilot. But Jim Croce died at the age of 30 on September 20th, 1973, 44 years ago. We, of course, remember him. The album I Got a Name was released after his death, December 1st, 1973, with three big songs on it. Working at the Car Wash Blues, I'll Have to Say I Love You in a Song, and, of course, the title track from the album I Got a Name, released after his death in 1973. He left behind a wife and son, and his son, Adrian James Croce, is himself a singer and songwriter who is now 40, soon to be 46 years old. Croce is buried at Heim Solomon Memorial Park in Fraser, Pennsylvania. Jim Croce died 44 years ago this week, September 20th, 1973. You know we love all things literary here on Off the Deaton Path, so this week's fun fact known by few, as long as we're talking about things that happened in history, on September 21st, 1937, 80 years ago, this week, The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien, first published in London. Again, 80 years ago, this week on September 21st, 1937. And finally, before I turn to the meat of this podcast, I want to talk about two books that landed on my desk this week. Another new feature the worst invention known to man, and our ever hardworking mailman, Gary F. Taylor, born and raised in Savannah, that's right, he nominated this week's worst invention known to man, the speakerphone. And he says, quote, "I can never tell what anybody is saying on a speakerphone," unquote. And I was so interested by this that I posed this question to you. Do you agree with Mr. Taylor that, in fact, the speakerphone is the worst invention known to man? Or do you have your own nomination? Write to me at sdeaton@georgiahistory.com. Two books landed on my desk this week that I want to bring to your attention. I think if you are a history buff, a history fan, these are books that I think will be of interest to you. The first one is a book about the Sam Hose lynching. And you may be saying to yourself, I have no idea what that is. As you probably know, between the years of about 1880 and 1930, the years of great mass lynchings in the United States, and I mean great by just the sheer number of them, a great number. In Georgia alone, there were, that we know of, 458 lynch victims in the state of Georgia between 1882 and 1930. This number was only exceeded by Mississippi's total of 538. In 1899 alone, there were 27 Georgians who were the victims of lynch mobs. And it should be noted that lynching can refer to, it is not just, of course, hanging someone by a rope. Lynching is an extra-legal murder, an extra-legal killing of a person. It does not refer to the method of killing. It simply refers to the illegal killing. Lynching victims were often, of course, hanged, but also shot, burned, drowned, dismembered, dragged to death. There are any number of ways this could happen. One of the most notorious in American history, and certainly in Georgia history, was the lynching of Sam Hose. This happened on a Sunday afternoon, April 23rd, 1899. It was really one of these that was known as a spectacle lynching, which hundreds of people attended. This was a man who was accused of a crime. He was taken out, tied to a small pine tree. His body was mutilated. He was burned alive. His body parts were picked out and sold. This was a horrific, horrible event in Georgia history. It has been most notably written about in a book that came out, published by the University of Georgia Press in 2009, by Edwin Arnold, called What Virtue There Is in Fire, Cultural Memory and the Lynching of Sam Hose. But a new book arrived on my desk this week that takes a new look at this and links this to American religion, or Southern religion. This is a book by Donald G. Matthews, published by Cambridge University Press, and it's called At the Altar of Lynching, Burning Sam Hose in the American South. I read the introduction to this, which is a riveting account of Donald Matthews' own grandfather's part in a lynching, not as someone who took part in the lynching, but as someone who tried to protect one of the black workers on his farm. And Don Matthews' grandfather himself was beaten, and the repercussions down through the generations of what happened. But what he does, of course, is he ties this, the whole idea. Lynching was bound up, he says, for both whites and blacks, with religious ideas. And it's a fascinating and sure to be a controversial look at the link between Southern religion and lynching. Again, the book is called Donald G. Matthews at the Altar of Lynching. Or excuse me, the author is Donald G. Matthews. The book is titled At the Altar of Lynching, Burning Sam Hose in the American South. As a side note, it was published by Cambridge University Press. As a side note, as you may or may not know, the Georgia Historical Society administers the state's historical marker program for the state of Georgia. All new markers put up since 1998 have been put up by GHS. And one of the markers we have often talked about that we believe Georgia deserves to have is a marker about the Sam Hose lynching, which happened in Noonan, by the way. I think I failed to mention that. And very controversial, as you can imagine. Putting up a marker about these kinds of subjects brings out all kinds of emotions and feelings. Why would you want to mark something like that? Why do we need to remember such a horrific event? I think for all kinds of reasons that we do. I think it is essential. We always talk about having to take all of our past, the good, the bad, and the ugly. This is really ugly. One of the ugliest things that ever happened in Georgia history. And we don't really know what to do about it. how to talk about it, how to teach about these kinds of things. So I don't have any answers. I just bring that up as something for you to think about. Again, the book is written by Donald Matthews called At the Altar of Lynching, Burning Sam Hose in the American South. The other book is about the blues, the musical form, written by Adam Gussow, G-U-S-S-O-W, and I apologize if I am mispronouncing his name, but the book is called Beyond the Crossroads, The Devil and the Blues Tradition, and it is exactly what the subtitle suggests. It is a look at how the devil and the ideas about the devil, the symbolism of the devil, is such a charismatic and important figure in the blues tradition. If you love the blues, which so many of us do, and many people love the blues without even knowing that they're listening to the blues, because the blues influenced so many other parts of American music. I think this is a really groundbreaking study, a really interesting study that takes full measure of the devil's presence in blues music. And in particular, of course, the title, Beyond the Crossroads, refers to, of course, Robert Johnson, who was this legendary blues composer, guitarist, singer, who was born and died in Mississippi. He was born in 1911. He died August 16, 1938, near Greenwood, Mississippi. Very, very young. Didn't live very, 27 years old when he died. But Robert Johnson played an outsized part in influencing musicians later on. Few of his recordings survive, but the ones that do, numbers that he wrote, famous ones like Me and the Devil Blues, Hellhound on My Trail, I Believe I'll Dust My Broom, you may be familiar with ZZ Top's rendition of that, and one that I love, Love in Vain, which was recorded by the Rolling Stones later. He had a major impact on other musicians, including Muddy Waters, Elmore James, Eric Clapton, the Stones that I mentioned. Robert Johnson came in contact with masters of the Mississippi blues like Willie Brown, Son House. They thought that he, none of whom were at that time particularly impressed by his talent. He came back a year later and he could play and sing like nobody ever heard. And the legend grew that he somehow made a deal with Satan at a crossroads and acquired this talent as a guitarist, singer, and songwriter in exchange for the stipulation that he would have only 8 more years to live. And so Professor Gussow, who is an associate professor of English and Southern Studies at the University of Mississippi, explores all of that in this fascinating book. The idea of the devil, getting beyond the crossroads, what all of this symbolized, Robert Johnson's place in blues history, in this new book, published by the University of North Carolina Press, called Beyond the Crossroads, The Devil and the Blues Tradition. I should point out, I am not doing justice to either one of these books. I simply bring them to your attention as something that I think that you might be interested in. Finally, from the magazine rack this week, I commend to you the September edition of Smithsonian Magazine. It has two articles in it that I think, if you like history, you will particularly find interesting. Marcus Redeker, who is, his last name is spelled R-E-D-I-K-E-R, is one of the most renowned historians of Atlantic slavery that we have practicing today. He is a professor of Atlantic history at the University of Pittsburgh, and he has written a new book called The Fearless Benjamin Lay, subtitled The Quaker Dwarf Who Became the First Revolutionary Abolitionist. It's coming out this month by Beacon Press, and there is an excerpt in the latest edition of Smithsonian about this Quaker dwarf that I think you will find very interesting. There is also an article called Franklin's Secret Heartache. This is written by Stephen Kost, and it's about Benjamin Franklin, who I've always found fascinating as one of America's founding fathers. And historians have long debated why Benjamin Franklin treated his wife Deborah so poorly. And Stephen Kost has a stunning new theory in this article called Franklin's Secret Heartache. I'll let you read it, and you can figure out. This is in the September issue of Smithsonian Magazine. Check it out. Our producer for this week's edition of Off the Deaton Path is Biff Hooper. And as always, I ask that if you have anything negative to say about this podcast, anything mean or ugly, you want to direct those to Biff. Hardest working engineer in show business this week and every week is our own Brendan Crellin. Thank you, Brendan. Our legal counsel this week and every week are the law offices of Gallipo and Taylor. And as I mentioned, our hardworking mailman who lumbers in every week, staggering under the load of the mail we get here, is Gary F. Taylor, born and raised. That's right. I ask you to check out all things going on about the Georgia Historical Society at georgiahistory.com. When you can, please take a look at my blog at Off the Deacon Path, and join us again next week when we'll waste probably even more of your time than we did this week. Thank you for joining us. So long, everybody.